Blog Talk Radio.
It's a poignant, transcendent journey. Riveting and raucous, it's a wild, exhilarating ride. Everybody fasten your seatbelts.
I am dominating at my fingertips.
And you're listening to Hell in a Cell Radio.
The Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Hell in a Cell Radio.
Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are live!
The following presentation is controversial and may be offensive to some audiences. Discretion is advised.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition, I guess, of HIC Talk Radio. I am not the Dean of Credibility, Double D Dean Dixon. We are trying to locate Mr. Dixon at the moment. If anybody knows where he is, let me know. That would be good. Thank you very much. I'm the above average comedian, Dan the Man Kyle Chico. Follow me on Twitter at DanLaw83. With me... holding his hand, I don't know what to do without the host, is Omega Squad, Chris Green. Not Chris Green, it's Chris Green. Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Oh, great.
Hello, fine people. Follow me on Twitter at Omega Squad.
Well, tonight we're supposed to...
And let me know if you can find...
Dean
Dixon.
Yeah, thank you.
this is going to be interesting.
This is going to be fun.
We're going to have an experiment tonight. See how
MMA,
how we do our own.
Yeah, so far not so good. if you check my blood pressure right now, I'd be admitted to a hospital. Our guest tonight
just
is
podcasting.
Yes, I know, but I try to be professional. Our guest tonight is MMA fighter Paul the Headhunter Buentello. How'd I do with the name? You doing good?
Paul Buentello, the Headhunter. Yep.
That'll be yours.
MMA veteran, UFC veteran, former UFC heavyweight championship contender. A lot of guy who's got a lot of fights under his belt, a career that spans even into the dark ages of MMA before the Ultimate Fighter. So he should be an interesting discussion.
And I'm going to ask because I don't know, is he still he's still active, right?
He is indeed still active. He just recently is coming off a loss in our good friend Nick Maynard's promotion, Legacy Fighting Championship, so where he fought for their light heavyweight championship and came up on the short end of that decision.
At 40 years old, man.
Yep.
We're going to review eventually. I think we're going to. Well, you're going to talk about anything that happened this week in the world of UFC and MMA, Strikeforce, Bellator, whatever's around.
but we have a fight night coming up on Saturday. We're going to preview the Ultimate Fight Night, Brown versus Silva.
Where you're going to preview it. I'm going to
do it.
I'm going to sit here and go, sure, whatever you say.
What do you think, Dan? What do you think of Matt the Immortal Brown versus Eric Silva?
I think if he starts playing the puck against the boards better, that he'd be able to score a little bit more goals if he starts passing it into the slot.
You really should start doing that.
Just mixing it up. Yeah, you know, Paul Buentello, I heard, he started his career as goaltender, and then they stuck him up his left wing, and his career was just skyrocketed, back and forth, by the way. I heard that. It's very nice. First, I guess, let's go over what the week that was in wrestling, or the last couple of days. We had... The 2014 Extreme Rules from the Izod Center in East Rutherford, New Jersey. First off, I'll just say this. I didn't have any problems with it.
I had a few hiccups. Nothing severe, but just some skipping.
Yes, I didn't have any problems with it because I was using the Kindle.
Yeah, I was on my PS4.
Yes.
I did see other people report, at least on the PS4 version, that there was some skipping as well.
Well, as you know, it's playoff hockey, so Kelly and I are doing that. And I'm like, well, the wrestling's on. You know what? We'll mute the TV. We'll stick Extreme Rules on the Kindle. Because Comcast recently upgraded their Blast service, so it is much faster and much better. So that stuff's getting quicker. So I can stream like two hockey games at once and put on an episode of Top Gear on my laptop at once. So it's not a bandwidth issue, network. But once I was streaming the games on the Xbox and the pay-per-view on the Kindle, and as soon as the game was over, I said, well, we'll put the main event on the Xbox. Shouldn't have done that. As soon as we got to right after the spot with the that's not a bulldozer. Crane. What is that? I guess it's a bull. The big machine.
Forklift.
That's the name. That's what it meant.
The thing with the teeth on the end.
The thing with the hooks on the end. As soon as it got past the forklift, it froze. And by the time I got logged in, got on the computer, they were already back in the ring, and I saw the last minute. So that was awesome. Before we talk about the card at all, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but they've got to do something about this. I mean, to my understanding, the MLB, the guys who take care of the MLB network, not the network, the TV, the streaming stuff,
mm-hmm.
is also hosting the servers for the network. Dude, fix that. I mean, I'll hook it up to the TV through the laptop as long as I can, but I want to sit in my living room in my house and watch it on, a television. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's certainly the way I would prefer to watch it, as much as I love the stuff.
But. Be that as it may, I'm still waiting for them to put the Nitros and Thunders on, and then I'll start complaining when I try to watch it. Like, all right, fix this.
Yeah, I don't watch enough of it to really complain, I guess.
I don't do, and I didn't mean to do that, I'm sorry. I don't do the pre and post show. Because I don't have the attention span for it. I did it the first week to see what was up. But I do a lot of the, I'm going through the old Legends of Wrestling, I'm going through the Clash of the Champions now. They're online, a lot of old WCW pay-per-views. And the series, I'm watching, I don't barely watch any of it live because I have so many problems, so I go back and do the on-demand stuff on the new episodes. But I use it quite a bit in that respect. How much do you use it? Just for the pay-per-views? I mean, it's worth it.
Mostly I'm using it for pay-per-views, but I have been starting to watch NXT. So I've done that.
I'm watching NXT too. But like I said, I'll go back and on demand, quote-unquote on demand. I don't watch the stuff live because once the hockey season cools off, and yes, people do like hockey, Chris, I will. I'll start
I'm aware.
Stuff live. Yeah,
I'm from the north. I'm aware.
Yeah. That's true. I forgot. Yeah. I don't have the game on right now because
it was more of a random commentary of Daniel than any particular opinion of mine.
No. I made reference to the back and forth comment. It was funny, dude. I loved it. It was the fact that it got play was hilarious. So. Since I'm trying to stretch this out, I'm going to stop now. Let's get to the card. Extreme Rules. Didn't waste time again with the pre-show. I missed El Torito. I missed Hornswoggle. Did you see it?
I did see it.
And?
It was surprisingly entertaining.
Really?
Yeah. This is one of those matches where you just have to accept that it's going to be stupid.
All right.
And... but, you know, they were trotting out the plunder. And it was the most extreme match of the entire card. Quite frankly, they're going over ladders. They're setting up ladders and tables, and guys are going through tables, and they have like the little step ladders for the ladders for El Torito and Hornswoggle.
You can say small people, short people.
The small people. If you didn't expect much, you were fine. It was surprising, entertaining. It was one of the better matches on the card. More for the guys who got in at 3MB and the Los Mandadores. you know, Hornswoggle just kind of doesn't have it. But El Torito can go, which is, he's pretty really good.
Well, I'm assuming, obviously, that he was a wrestler, that they obviously hired him for his wrestling skills.
Yeah.
I assume. I'm sure there's something I haven't bothered to look. Like, I use the internet a lot, but you'll find out a lot of times that I'd rather go from memory and I don't look a lot of stuff. I could look that up. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
So that was Torito. I think El Torito did win, right?
He did win, yes.
Okay. Go ahead. No, please.
It was surprisingly good match. Well executed. I mean, they had midgets versions of Cole, JBL, and Waller. doing announcing, and they were ragging on the regular guys. So that was kind of fun. It was just fun and stupid and silly, and it was entertaining. I mean, it wasn't good. It wasn't. You know, it was typical WWE stupidity, but it was, like I said, if you could shut your mind off a little bit, it was fun. It was fun.
Well, now that I looked up El Torito up, yeah, I do know who he is. He's been wrestling for years. He wrestled for the AAA. I don't even know how to pronounce that. The AAA company.
AAA.
Yeah, and the CMLL. I cannot pronounce his normal wrestling name, but he's known, it's Spanish for a little golden mask,
mm-hmm.
And I've seen him before a bunch of times, now that I looked it up. It's just one of those things where I'm like, well, maybe I could use Wikipedia. You never think of these things. Just,
the more you know.
I'd rather ask somebody else, hey, who's this? And now the answer, a standard answer, I guess, well, why don't you look it up? Well, then why don't you shut up and tell me? That's not met with very good reaction, by the way, if you haven't guessed.
Good enough.
We had, what was the opening? Well, I'll just go in order. Cesaro and Jack Swagger and Rob Van Dam. Am I wrong in thinking this was not a number one contender for the, who is the number one contender for the title now? Rob Van Dam was, right?
For what? For the Intercontinental title?
Yeah, for the IC belt.
No, that was Barrett.
It was Barrett.
Barrett won the tournament. This was the three guys that didn't win from the semifinals that didn't win.
For some reason, my memory of it also added in the number one contendership, so that was completely wrong.
Yeah.
But Cesaro, it was a good triple threat, I thought. Cesaro, Jack Swagger, and Rob Van Dam. What did you think of that match, sir?
I thought it was okay. I don't know what happened in the communication that the announcers didn't think it was an elimination.
Yes, I'm so glad you pointed that out. Keep going, and then I'm going to make it.
Yeah, it was just, one, I didn't realize it was an elimination to start with, and two, I didn't understand why it was an elimination. I thought there were some good spots, though, from Cesaro and Rob Van Dam. The Swagger elimination was odd. I think there was miscommunication there, but I think everybody... Obviously, Cole didn't think it was supposed to be an elimination. It just came off as weird. But I thought overall it was a decent match and did a decent job of putting Cesaro over.
I thought that was odd, too. They mentioned it at one point the last 2 weeks because of I was at Eddie Izzard last week. During the show, but on Mondays, I've been trying to do playoff hockey and then watching the Hulu version of Raw, which is nice because it's edited into about an hour and a half. I remember them mentioning it at least once, so I kind of forgot about it too until Michael Cole was like, by the way, this is elimination, as if to say, I have no idea.
Yeah,
and I work here, so
I
felt better.
Yeah. It was a decent match.
I'm glad Cesaro is going over as much as he is. I'm liking it. I still feel bad for Swagger a little bit, but I'm kind of over that.
I cooled on it a little bit, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, it works and it doesn't.
That's a good way. I like that.
I mean, for getting hooked up with Paul Heyman, it hasn't seemed to do much for them. I mean, he's just still just kind of there, and he's just He's got the Swiss Superman and the lousy entrance music now. I mean, he's still really good. I just not terribly excited by his feuds with Jack Swagger and RVD, I guess.
You know what, though? I'll say this again, looking at RVD now and where he was at the end of his Impact run, it certainly looks like he's enjoying himself again. I'm telling you, every time I watch an Impact episode, it doesn't look like half the people are enjoying themselves in the ring. That's just me. The next match was, Rusev versus, this was racist. Rusev versus R-Truth and Xavier Woods. What the hell, man? Why is he beating up all a bunch of black dudes?
They're not black dudes. They're enhancement talent.
Oh. Oh.
No, I'm just...
My name's Chris. I don't seek color. I don't even know what color I am. I'm just like Steve Colbert.
Yeah, no, I don't know. It was fine.
I was being sarcastic.
At least Truth and Xavier Woods got on the pay-per-view, right?
Yeah, 2 minutes and 50 some odd seconds. That's great.
I mean, what else would you expecting? I mean,
You know what? I just mute it and watch Lana. I don't care about Rusev. She can come out and talk Russian all she wants, talk about how good Putin is. I'm just going, sure he is. Whatever you say, babe.
Yeah. Still not sure why they dropped his first name.
Yeah, well,
you know, whatever.
It's like Kozlov. Eventually, he was just Kozlov because last name is more threatening than with a first name, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, then we got the IC match. Big E defending against Bad News Barrett, and I pretty much that went the way I thought it was going to. I didn't get my predictions in last week, but. Bad News Barrett won, and I really thought that was the way it was going to go coming in after Raw. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was pretty much the way you had to go. I mean, certainly the IC belt. I mentioned on some podcast last week that Big E hadn't done much of anything.
What?
With the belt. He defended it a few times, don't get me wrong, but he didn't do anything with it, didn't have any meaningful feuds that I can remember. And it was he was just kind of there, and it's was time for someone else to try to take it over, and at least they need to start some new storylines, quite frankly. Because WrestleMania is over, all that stuff is pretty much done. They need some new stuff to come around and
start building up that sphere.
Yeah, and Barrett's over, so you might as well let him take the title and run with it for a little while. So,
do you think this is another way of do you think it'll stick this time for Barrett? I'll ask it like that.
I hope so. I don't know. I mean, it doesn't seem like a long shelf life gimmick. People are like, I got some bad news for you. For now.
Well, it's better than singing.
You know, 6 months from now, it's hard to say that that's going to be the case.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, it's really difficult to say.
I like that better in Bray Wyatt right now. We'll talk about that in a second.
Mm-hmm.
that's all.
Yeah. Well, I mean.
And
yeah.
Wait, hold off on that, because obviously you haven't been anything but honest before, so I expect the same now. The Shield versus Evolution.
Evolution.
And I didn't expect Evolution to go over not cleanly. So Well, what I meant was is if they did win, I didn't expect it a clean. Like a schmalz, as I said.
Sure.
So that went exactly the way I expected it. I liked the match. Somebody forgot to tell Batista to wear black. I'm just kidding. It doesn't matter. But I enjoyed that. And it was a good long – it took up some time, too.
It was a great match, I thought.
Yeah. You've been saying it for a couple of weeks. I'm getting more and more – on board with Seth Rollins every day. Not that I wasn't on the train, but every week I'm like, whoa.
He's really come into his own in the last couple of weeks, and I think they mentioned that Raw. I mean, but he's really taken the ball and run with it, and he's putting on great matches. He's selling like a madman. He's diving off a balcony. I mean, what more can you ask of a guy trying to get over? Right now, I think he is probably the best one of the three right now.
I still like Ambrose's style. I'm just going to call him Moxley because I try to not call him Moxley every time. He's just different than everybody else right now. But I would say this, the last couple of weeks, Rollins has been the top performer on the team.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's an embarrassment of riches because, I mean, you can take any one of these guys and they're better than most of the guys on the roster.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how good this team is. And these three guys have all the talent in the world. And I know some people think that Rollins is the odd man out. I'm not convinced of that in the Daniel Bryan era. I think I think he's definitely got potential to go forward. I think with Ambrose, I think he's certainly got the style, but that crazy style might not play well in the WWE universe with a singles thing. We know Reigns has got the look. We know Reigns has got the power. He's got the ability to be a top guy. I'm not as convinced about Ambrose. I think Rollins has more of a shot in that respect. But I still think Ambrose, get me wrong, again, I think all three guys are great and better than most on the roster. So,
well, yeah, I hope we get time to talk about Raw later, because then I'll tell you what I think about Ambrose and how that went down on Raw. Before we talk about the rest of the card, and wrestling all together, we're going to take a little break with the Mystery Men, and we'll be right back with the team hopefully intact. We'll be right back, folks.
right, and that was the Mystery Men.
Hi, Dean.
Which song was that, Dan?
This is How the Magic Happens, available on their album Musica Enmascarada, $9 on lucha-rock.com. Hi, Dean.
You have that throwback down so well, it's a wonderful thing to hear.
Have a good teacher, sir.
Now, I'm, of course, the Dean of Credibility, Double D, and you can find me at Folsom County. You can also find the official Twitter of the show at HIAC Talk Radio. Make sure you check out HIACTalkRadio.com, where you can actually get your tickets at the following affiliate.
Lots of things can go wrong on a date. You could forget your wallet, get caught in the rain, run into your ex. Hey, what's up? Or your ex can turn into a zombie.
It's a zombie apocalypse!
Okay, that probably won't happen. Safest bet, go to the movies and use Fandango to buy your tickets in advance. Don't let the zombies win.
Fandango. Eat popcorn, not brains. Movie tickets, trailers, and showtimes.
All right, so make sure you go to HIAC Talk Radio. We have plenty of affiliates for you to shop at. Guys, I had a little trouble getting to the studio today.
Uh-oh. What happened, sir?
Well, I flew in from Chicago. Boy, are my arms tired.
I need to hit my drum set up today.
Yes. Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
So, Danny's going to take over the above-average comedian. Slot.
Yes.
Yeah, so. You better step up your game.
You can have it.
And that actually goes back to a show talk that Dan and I had. Yeah. We were discussing ways to grab more of an audience, and we figured we could be more like the morning zoo, if you will.
We didn't play enough farts or sound effects at this point.
Sure.
There you go. Hey, I'm the Dean of Credibility, Double D, Jim Dixon.
That's right. So, guys.
Hi.
We should be having an interview in just a few moments.
Sure.
As long as Paul Bentello remembers.
I'm so glad you're here, Dean.
I heard you guys, you were discussing, what was it, Raw, or were you?
We were on Extreme Rules because I was buying time.
The somewhat extreme rules?
The somewhat kind of extreme, maybe hardcore rules. We're on Bray Wyatt and John Cena, if you want to take it from there, sir.
Well, I'm okay. The possessed child, I suppose, you guys were?
We didn't even get there yet, but now that you mention it. Did anybody else think, if I'm wrong, you both bury me for this, not physically, I mean figuratively, did anybody else think that this was kind of boring?
The match was boring.
Thank you. Okay. The match, the finish, the whole thing was boring.
I thought the finish could have been good.
If you're talking about the kid, I am going to figuratively hit you.
Well, go ahead and figuratively hit me.
I'm going to.
They overdid it. All they had to do was have the kid there and just sing in his normal voice, and it would have been just as effective, if not more so. But instead they had to do the voice thing and make it all goopy.
I'm so over singing. I'm over it. And it makes me even more enraged when I hear the crowd singing it. Go to church and sing the song. Okay? It's stupid. I hate that aspect of this whole gimmick. You know, and I didn't get a chance to talk about it. I'll throw this in here real quick because I wasn't on last week. Everybody, I was watching Twitter because I was checking the hockey score on Wednesday. I was looking at everybody's comment who was watching it from Monday and DVR about how creepy this segment was. And I watched and I was like, "What? I don't get it, folks. I don't know. I didn't get it. I didn't like it. Color me surprised."
Well, you're taking over my role of being the cynic of the group, Dan.
I hated it. I hated it. I'm sorry. I mean, I'll give it back and say I like it.
No. I appreciate your honesty and.
I don't get it. Okay.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't get it either.
At least I feel better that I'm not the only one. I was worried. I'm like, why is everybody saying this is great? And then I was reading your tweets about it, and I felt better. I'm like, I'm not the only one. I really think this is stupid. And at first I thought maybe it was because I saw the tweets and reports going, okay, maybe I pumped it up too much internally. And then I was like, no, I didn't pump it up. It was stupid. am I still?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
You're the man
The next match was Paige versus Tamina Snuka. Chris, how do you feel about the match, sir?
I was underwhelmed.
Yes.
I know that Tamina is not regarded as a great worker.
Mm-mm.
For all that Paige has come in, and they haven't booked her very, very well, I don't think. She's hasn't really had a good match that I've seen since the Alicia Fox match, which was a good match, but subsequent matches haven't been that great. And so, I mean, I don't know. Her momentum is floundering right now. I guess they're waiting for AJ to get back to really push this and knock it out, but she wasn't even on Raw this week, so, you know.
I agree with you. But I think more of it was Tamina and her performance.
Yeah,
I just don't think she was ready.
Well, I think it's more on her Paige's opponents than on Paige as far as the match quality goes.
Oh no! Don't get me wrong. It takes two to tango. That is it's cliched, but it's true. It takes two to tango, whether it be for the positive or for the negative. You both got to be in it to have that effect either way. So you can't put it all on Tamina. I don't have to preface this by saying this. I'm not an in-ring performer. I just think Paige has one up on Tamina. And what aggravated me more was the internet was certain. There were... We don't see eye to eye, the internet and me, with Paige. Let's just say that. I'll just say that.
In that you don't like Paige?
No, I like Paige. I really do like Paige. I think they're just booking this all wrong. She came in with tons of momentum, and it's kind of gone.
I agree with that. Yeah, I agree with that totally. I think that was my broader point, is that they aren't booking her very strong.
But I also don't think that's entirely her fault. No.
I mean, she's doing the best of what she can. If she had, I think if she had been in that group of girls, 6-7 years ago with Trish and Lita and Victoria and all of them, she would have been great. But right now, she's struggling with the talent she's got around her right now.
And the only thing else we got, sir, is the main event, Kane versus the champion, Daniel Bryan. I'll start on this one. I quite enjoyed what I saw of it. Because like I said, I explained, I was on the Kindle all night, and the better part of me said, stay on the Kindle until the show's over. I said, the hockey game's over. I'm going to switch it back to the Xbox, turn it on, got up to the forklift, and that was it. As I said, I saw the last minute. After the forklift spot literally shut off, I posted a picture of how the server was lost and got the computer plugged into the other room on the HDMI cable and saw the pinfall. So other than that, I enjoyed the match. That was my second favorite match of the night.
I was underwhelmed.
Really?
I couldn't get into it, quite frankly. It just seemed to take. It just seemed to plod along, especially when they went to the back. That took forever.
Do TVs do that when they throw them in water?
I don't know.
I'd like to try that.
It was still plugged in, so I guess it could have.
I mean, would it kind of like puff like that? Because if not, I'm going to stick some fireworks on them.
I'm sure there was some special effects. Now,
I attempted, when you go onto the network, I'll shorten this explanation up. You pull something on the network. If you try to fast forward to it on the Xbox, you can't watch it. And I tried to do it today to see what I missed of the match, and I missed it. So quickly, tell me what happened after the forklift. Was it basically just carrying him out to the ring?
He carried him out to the ring. So he brings the forklift, drags the forklift all the way down to the ring. Lifts the forklift up so he gets it in the ring, and then tips it so that Kane dumps off and rolls down into the ring, and then does a flying headbutt from off the pallet, off the forklift, across like three quarters of the ring, and does the flying headbutt.
Man, all right, so I didn't even see the flying headbutt. I heard the reaction in the 2-3, and I was like, oh, I'm glad I turned this back on. Goodbye.
Yeah, I just didn't think it was a very, very good match. I mean, you can't – Kane is not a guy you're going to get a 5-star match out of. You're
going to
get a passable match out of it, but he's not going to give you he's not going to give you Evolution Shield, you know, for the more recent thing. But, you know, he's always there. He's always a monster. You can play with that, but it was – you know, I just didn't find it very interesting.
Listen, this is also coming from a guy where the rest of the internet says Paige sucks, and I say she doesn't. So if I'm off base about the main event, I can perfectly understand that. I thought Sting was great after 96. Apparently, I was wrong about that, too.
Yes, you were.
Yes.
So wrong.
That's fine. Yeah, I can accept that. Listen. I have a big mouth, but if I'm wrong, I'm man enough to admit that I'm wrong, and I was wrong. Until I'm proven wrong about this, I'm going to say I'm right.
I think in the case of Paige, you're on the right side of the argument. It's part of her gimmick to scream, get over it. It's part of her It's part of her life that she's pale, and get over it.
I'm pale, too. I like to pale.
But I just... people's arguments are so petty and silly when it comes to a wrestler.
You gotta stop screaming. Well, I kind of like the screaming. Keep doing that.
Well, yeah, you're a Daphne fan, so...
Pale, screamer, huh? You see the connection?
I do see the connection, so... I understand it as well. I see the appeal, and I like Paige, and I think it's partially booking's fault that she had... booking can do a lot of things, and... she was booked very well in NXT, and since coming up and winning the Divas Championship, it just seems that it's a hold pattern until AJ Lee comes back and wins the title back. And that's a shame. Uh-huh. But she's young and she can rebound, but...
the thing is though... go, Chris.
Well, she's 21. She's got plenty of time. She's got all the talent in the world. She just needs a different... angle. She needs someone that can work with her and bring her up. And AJ Lee is probably going to be the person to do that. But, I mean, as Dean said, I mean, you know, people getting on her for being pale, for being screaming. The screaming, it's not that offensive to me. It's really just it's part of her gimmick, the paleness, whatever. It is what it is. She's the anti-diva. They really just need to play that up.
Yeah.
Like they did in NXT. I don't know why they don't play that up more. They really just haven't done a very good job of introducing Paige to us or establishing a character for her. We've established that she can wrestle, but we haven't established a character on main WWE programming yet.
I think she should go goth. Complete the connection. I'm not being serious. Come on.
Why not?
I really... think that she has enough time to keep being booked in matches and work on the ring stuff. So by the time AJ comes back, it'll be really entertaining. Whether she drops the belt or not, it'll be good. More obviously, I'm not saying anything special or surprising when I say more ring time just means you get better.
Very true, Dan. Now, before we continue on, whether we talk about USC or WWE, the programming and things of that nature, what I would like to do is that there was a story that came out this week about Connor the Crusher. And for those of you who don't know, we actually talked about Connor when the first story broke, when he was backstage. Daniel Bryan, of course, was his favorite. It was probably about a year or so ago, do you think, Omega? You remember the story, right?
Yeah, I don't know if it was that long ago, but it was.
It was within a year.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't too long ago, though.
But we talked about it. He was backstage. He was a young child battling cancer, and he just recently lost the battle. But however, before he went to the next plane of existence or whatever there is afterwards, there was this beautiful package that WWE produced, and we'll talk about it when it's over. like I said, it's it was really a moving tribute.
I'm outside of Console Energy Center, where a 7-year-old boy battling cancer is about to meet his hero.
My wrestling name is Connor the Crusher.
Connor talked himself backstage somehow. Daniel is by far his favorite. That was probably the most excited I've ever seen Connor.
Do you guys think you could beat us?
I could.
Yo.
Connor was special for a million reasons. His smile, he was so quick-witted. He was nice to everybody, but just sometimes brutally honest.
Stop, you're crazy.
You couldn't help but talk to him and just instantly fall in love with him.
He was obviously sick, but you'd never know it from his personality.
And then maybe I'll have a match with Daniel Bryan. It could be me and him, and he'll beat me.
Why did you promise not to hurt?
You make him promise not to hurt me. You know how tough that guy is?
I'm not going to do that.
Come on, bud. Be fair.
I'm not going to do that.
Just be fair. Be fair.
No.
I just couldn't help but hug him, and I wanted to kiss him and hold him. And then his dad told me that he didn't have very long to live.
We got the news that there wasn't much time left.
We came up with the idea to invite him to WrestleMania, to give him something to hang on for.
Tell him where we're going next Sunday, where we're going
to
be.
To WrestleMania.
Oh, that's awesome.
A week before WrestleMania in Washington, D.C. Before Raw started, before doors were open, there were no fans in the arena.
Connor and Daniel started in the back, and Daniel's music came on.
He came out and started doing the yes thing, and all the superstars were around the ring.
We started chanting, Connor, Connor, Connor.
Connor got into the ring, and Hunter immediately dove in and said, hit me. And Connor said, I can't hit you.
Hit him and cover him.
Here it comes.
Just think all the superstars and divas who saw it, they were all touched by it. They were just all touched by it, that we could make such a difference in one child's life.
It was really a great moment. The best part of WrestleMania for me was that it was the first time in, I'd say, 4 years where I actually forgot that Connor was sick.
Hold on, let me get my ready.
All right.
WrestleMania!
He was very energetic. He moved a lot. He didn't need his help as much as he normally needed help.
He did it! He did it! Daniel Bryan did it! The impossible dream has become reality!
At the end of WrestleMania, as a dad, I kept hoping that maybe Daniel saw Connor sitting there. Daniel got out of the ring on our side, and the very first person that Daniel came up to was Connor. He leaned over and said, Connor, you mean a lot to me. You give me a lot of strength. You helped me to earn this, and please keep on fighting. Connor was elated. It was a perfect moment. I truly believe that the whole experience extended Connor's time with me. There's no greater gift that I could get, and there's no way I could ever repay them for that. As a father, that's all I can ask for is more time. And especially the time I got was so great. He was himself, and it was like having my little boy back.
Taker just, he was an old soul. He just had a magic about him. He had a light, and anybody that was around him could feel it and is the better for it.
Now, besides the obvious story of the passing of this special young man, I think one thing that in the weekly grind we kind of forget about is the power that professional wrestling as a whole can have. Even on the independent level, there's body slams for Blake that promotions in Delaware do. There's always some type of fundraising activity that is going on. Sometimes you're a little bit suspicious of the actual intent and where the money's going from some promoters, but that's part of the game. In this particular story, you can see the power that professional wrestling had for this young child and for this young father as well. The father can't be, but he's probably younger than me, I would imagine. And that some of that pain of losing Connor was taken away from this experience that Connor had with WWE. Just a feel-good story that had some tragic consequences. And, you know, they didn't let you know any of this was going on, that our special guest here today is Connor, the Crusher, or anything like that. So when you find out about it, you're like, wow, that's really cool that they did that. Dan, your thoughts on Connor, the Crusher?
I don't really have any words to say. It really... it really brought me to a place emotionally. I mean, I didn't know the kid, I didn't know the family, but going beyond how sick he was and how much he suffered or did not suffer, I don't know. I don't ever want to be in that position. What they did for that family to bring that much happiness into that little brief period of time was amazing. And that's all I really want to say about it.
All right. Omega, your thoughts on the kind of the Crusher story?
You know, as you said, we somewhat forget in the week-to-week complaining about the product that WWE and wrestling in general as a whole does these type of things week in and week out. The Make-A-Wish stuff, the charity work, the bully anti-bullying stuff. They do a lot of good in the world, and you know, it behooves us to remember that. And this is just one shining example of the kinds of things they do on almost daily basis.
I couldn't agree more. I certainly can't agree more with that. But WWE. But, you know, I'm going to extend a thanks as well for doing that for that young child, because that's really something. You know, to your point, Omega, it's one of those things week in, week out, we're always talking about not the bad side, but how they could be more entertaining or what have you. And then all of a sudden you're hit with a left hook, so to say, of a story like this. And you're like, you know, they're trying their best, you know. So in that respect, just a great job by WWE in this case. You guys have anything else?
I shared a moment with my fiance about it. We don't have children. I don't think we'll ever have children. And it's not something that particularly bothers me. But I told her the story. I didn't even get to show her the video. And, again, we don't know the family, don't know the child, but we both broke down. And that's how emotional it was. And I don't think... Don't take any moment or any day for granted. I don't know how many people have to go or how many times you have to experience tragedy to start treating yourself better, eating better, doing things better to appreciate how fragile the life is. And this is one of them. And again, the WWE wrestling in general gets a lot of poo flung at it, a lot of negative stories. And if this doesn't make you, you know, it was a tragic thing that happened, but if this doesn't make you smile and make you feel better, then you I don't think you have a soul. It just was amazing. I think I watched the video 3 times because it just made me smile wide as I could. It just amazing what they did for that family and what they did for Connor. It's just great.
Yeah, definitely. I certainly do agree with those thoughts. But Omega, are you ready?
I am ready.
Well, Omega, I'll be quite honest. I was ready to go one place, but we're going another.
Why not?
You know, we got to stay on our toes. What we're going to do now, of course, Paul Bentello, he is a MMA icon, quite frankly. He's been around since the early days. He's gone through a few different eras in MMA. He went through the late 90s era when it was John McClain considered it cage fighting, human cockfighting, I believe is the actual quote. John McClain has since changed his mind, like some people would. Not only that, he has gone all the way through to the growth of popularity that it's currently on. He's been everywhere. He's fought everybody. Well, not everybody, but he's fought a ton of people, and I can't wait to have him on. I've been looking forward to this for quite some time. He'll be on right after this. My guest at this time, it is none other than Paul Bentello. Paul, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, doing great. Glad to finally get on the air with you guys.
Yes, yes, I've been waiting for this moment for what seems so long. But, Paul, I do want to start out now. A lot of guys now can go to a gym and sign up for MMA classes, that sort of thing. What was it like back in 1997 before you debuted? How did you get involved in MMA? How did this become your career?
It's just one of those things that kind of fell into it. You know, I went to my first show back in the first year of 96 in Amarillo, Texas for the USWF. Steve Nelson brought back shoot fighting. And so I went in there and I saw the crowd. The crowd was crazy. And I was like, man, I want to do this. I want to do that. And I got into the fight. And my first training camp consists of just, by the time Steve Nelson gave me a call, I had like maybe 3 weeks notice. So I was like, oh, I'll be ready. And started, it was baling hay. I was basically loading hay on a trailer and delivering to different places. So we would start the tractor up and let it run straight down the field and run on the side of the tractor, grabbing bales of hay and got ready for the fight. And back then is, nobody was worried about their record. Nobody was worried about win or loss or whatever. Everything was about, I want to fight and I want to win. And guys just jumped in there and fought. Nowadays, everybody wants to be technical and figure out who they want to fight and what they want to do. It's not like the old days. Just get in there and scrap it out.
Yeah, things have certainly changed since then. I think the rise of people like GSP and people of that nature may have changed how a fight goes. Now, moving along, within your first four fights, you're fighting Dan Severn, UFC Hall of Famer. let's just go back to that fight. What was that like for you, getting in there with Dan Severn?
That was a big rush. I mean, I thought that was my time to make it, and you know, he actually came off of winning the Ultimate, so he was actually the current or just coming out of the UFC, and he was looking for more fights, and at that time it's called pancration or shoot fighting in Amarillo, and it's open hand strikes, and it was a good rush to go against the beast and try to give it hell as much as I could, but he got me in a side choke, a head and arm choke from the side, which is back then a 1996 kind of move, and I thought I knew how to get out of it. We worked on that position over and over, but he basically just did a little simple 1996 side rear choke or something.
Mm. Yeah, you did come up on the losing end. Looking back, is that one of your is that still a highlight for you? You shared the cage with Dan Severn?
You know, I got mixed emotions about that, knowing Dan back in the day, but I kind of lost my flavor. I kind of lost my flavor for Dan Severn back in when, and you know, nobody knows this, but back in, I think it was 99, 98. It's back, yeah, probably 99 or more. I was supposed to fight Travis Fulton, the Iron Man of, you know, now I think Travis Fulton has over 200 fights and crazy stuff. I was supposed to fight him for IFC. I pulled out. I got injured or something. I can't remember exactly, but what got me buggled on that deal was Dan Severn was fighting Travis Fulton, and Dan Severn, I'm not 100%, but Dan Severn offered Travis Fulton an extra $500 not to knock him out or hit him in the face and let the fight last. So at that time, California was trying to legalize MMA, and they come out to the IFC show to watch MMA show, and they had to push on the back burner. The reason why is because Dan Severn and Travis Fulton did a work. I mean, they said it was so obvious, it was blatant obvious that it was a work. They were throwing each other around, doing some suplexes and stuff like that. At the time, the commission was like, this stuff is not real. We're going to sanction this stuff. And it put MMA back, at that time, NHB, back on the back burner for California. And I just think for him being a pioneer of the sport, why would he do that at the time when everybody knew that the California was watching it with a microscope to make it legal in California? That hadn't happened. I mean, I'm probably not 100%. I'm probably 80%, but Dan Severn shouldn't have done that. He's a pioneer of the sport. He shouldn't have put in the work. He should have fought hard and fought like he always had, and asking somebody to take extra money not to hurt him or hit him in the face. You know, I could be you, and that's a different story.
Wow. I've never heard that story. Go ahead, Chris.
I got a lot of them.
That's good. So, Paul, you were fighting at this time in the era when you could fight 2, 3, 4 times a night. How do you prepare to fight 2 or 3 guys now when we think about guys, certainly in the post-tough era, you know, only going 3 rounds. You're going 10-minute rounds and fighting guys, you know, 3 in a row. How do you get ready for those type of
Wow. You brought back some memories. You're talking about 3 times, and you guys don't probably know this, but I did tough man contests too, as well. I did 6 of them. I've won 5. I lost in the national finals. And one weekend alone, on a Friday I fought once, on Saturday I fought up to 4 times in one night. Granted, there are 1-minute rounds, 3 1-minute rounds, but you gotta admit, it was pretty hard. And when the USWF in Amarillo, Texas back then, they were doing 8-man tournaments. So you would fight 3 times. You would fight three times in one night. And the whole crazy thing about it was you had to try to finish your fight and get back to the locker room and try to relax and wait for the next one. And it's crazy now thinking about it that I'm fighting. I'm going to fight three times in one night. And back then, there was no hesitation on, okay, you can fight now, and then 20 minutes later, you're fighting again. And I fought a couple of shows in Texas where I fought, and then 20 minutes later, I fought again, and then 15 minutes later, I fought again. And I was so gassed and so wore out that, God, man, those are the days. Those were talking about Ironman stuff. And even Extreme Challenge with Monty Cox did those a couple of times. There's only a few shows that done the eight-man tournament. You know what? I think IFC did one in 2000 in Denver where they had Trevor Pringley, Forrest Griffin, Babalu, Jeremy Horn, God, who all these guys, and it was a sixteen man tournament in one night.
Wow!
Wow!
You speak of this almost wistfully. Did you prefer that to these one night fights?
Honestly, yeah. Let me tell you that. Because I mean, that now if I was to fight that, oh, definitely, because I've run. God, I mean, I've done so many. I probably did four or five of them. And I know as soon as you get done, get back there, relax, you know, go talk to a paramedic, tell them to give you some oxygen, don't drink too much water. You know, it's one of those things, and I've done it so much, I knew how to relax. But let me tell you guys a funny story. I fought IFC. The first time I fought IFC was in the 99, and I called Paul Smith called me out of the blue to come to a tournament, and I'm in there with Jason Gotsis. Look up his name, Jason Gotsis, King of Pancrase, Dan McGee, Rocky Bastini, and these other guys that were from Frank Shamrock. That's when Frank Shamrock had a team with Ken Shamrock. They had guys in there. It was just me and my daughter's mom were together. She was my team, and I was with mine. Everybody else had teammates. You look over and you see Frank Shamrock, Ken Shamrock, Bob Cook, all these guys in his little group over there. Then you look to the left, you see Jason Gotsis. You see Jason Gotsis with his group, all these Japanese guys. Then you look over and you see Barnett. Barnett's over there with his group, but he's part of the Lions game, but he's from Oklahoma, so he had his guys. You see all these teams. Then you see Caesar Gracie. That's when Caesar Gracie had, God, what's his name? Man, he was so good. You know, you see Chuck Liddell over there hanging out. All these guys, and you see me just standing there, and my daughter's mom, she's like, you're going to fight an eight-man tournament. She goes, who's going to be in your corner? I go, don't worry about it. Just give me water. She's like, what? I'm going to be in your corner? Yeah, just give me water. Let's do this. And to this day, Paul Smith, you know, he's a good friend of mine. I'm actually going up Labor Day weekend to hang out with them. We're going to kill a wild pig and do all kinds of stuff for the morning weekend. But the funny thing is I did an eight-man tournament. I fought three times in one night. The winner of the tournament gets $10,000. And I was like, yeah, I'm winning this. You know, I made it all the way to the finals with my daughter's mom as my cornerman. All my fights finished in the first round. And I go to the finals. I fight Dan McGee. Dan McGee was all green stuff. I couldn't hold on to him. He hits me a couple of times, drops an elbow, cuts my eye open. And I'm like, I'm not going to lose my eye. But the funny part is that Dan McGee got $10,000. Second place should get how much money, guys? How much money should second place get? If the first place winner is getting $10,000, how much the second place guy should get?
I'd say $5,000. How about you, Chris?
Yeah, generally you would think. You'd think like between 2,500 and 5,000 would generally be what you'd think.
Exactly. Let me tell you the mathematical that Paul Smith brought on to me. He goes, oh my God, you just won second place. Like, yeah, how much? $1,000.
Thanks for coming.
And then the funny thing is, I'm like, well, great. I didn't think about it at the time. I'm like, heck yeah, $1,000. I'm going to Disneyland. But I never, just a couple of years ago, I realized, like, dang, I fought three times in one night for $1,000. What the hell was I thinking? But then again, I did it for Boston as well. And I still get, to this day, I still get Boston at the hard time about how that mathematical problem he figured out that second place on a $10,000 winner gets $1,000.
Yeah.
I think I got hustled on that deal.
Yeah, I think you got hosed a little bit.
Just slightly.
Yeah, but I was going to say, not too long after that, just moving on, I thought you fought for your first title fight in King of the Cage 7, and that was against future UFC heavyweight champion Rico Rodriguez. How did that fight go?
Actually, I came off the injury. If you watch that fight closely, and then did you ever look at the name of that fight? What they called that fight? King of the Cage six or something?
Wet and Wild.
Do you remember from the movie with what's his name? Bring Home the Boom or Bring the Boom or whatever.
Yeah.
Come on, guys.
Yeah.
Remember Bring the Bang or Bring the Boom? What's that guy's name? Look it up.
Help me out, Dean. You're a film major.
I was a film major, but unfortunately, I don't put my degree to use such as this. I'm sorry. I do apologize.
Yeah, here comes the boom with Kevin James.
Okay.
From 2012, he did the movie. You know that part where they're slipping and sliding in the ring, where it's raining and they're slipping and sliding? That's from King of the Cage. That's exactly how King of the Cage was. Slipping and sliding. And I remember talking to Guy Metzer. Guy Metzer, he just fought. Who did he fight? He fought a big fight in Pride. And that's when, and nobody knows this, but that's when Pride, if you got an injury or you needed a fight, they would send you to King of the Cage because King of the Cage was their filler school, the filler team. So Pride would send guys to King of the Cage to fight to get ready for the big show. And Guy Metzer was in the back with Ken Shamrock and I think Pete Williams was back there. I asked Guy Metzer, I said, hey, are you going to wear shoes or are you not going to wear shoes? He goes, I'm going to wear shoes because it's, from the rain. And I never wear shoes. I'm like, oh, I'm going to wear shoes too because everybody's just slipping, falling all over the place. And if I wouldn't have wore those shoes, I probably would have got out of that knee bar. But since I wore those wrestling shoes, that's how Rico Rodriguez caught me in the knee bar.
Right.
Okay. Oh, that's crazy.
Now, later on, you eventually did win the King of the Cage heavyweight championship.
Rematch with Bobby Hoffman.
Yeah. Yeah, you did win it. And before you know it, after that win, like you said, that's kind of where the guys look at to get you on the big show. You're in UFC. You were there in UFC for, it looks like, four fights. You were actually against – you went for the UFC heavyweight championship with Arlovski. Looking back at that time in UFC, was it the highlight of your career to that point? Are there any bad feelings about it because you only got the four-fight trial? I mean, how do you feel looking back at UFC?
Well, you know, I went back again. I just went back for versus one in UFC 106. So I went back. I went full circle again. And looking back, I mean, it's a blast. I mean, I'm working now. I'm still competing. I'm getting the W's and getting the wins, and I'm just trying to make it back and give UFC one more big run. But the thing is, I'm doing my run at heavyweight, but this time the last two fights have been at 205.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Yeah,
the
definitely.
Last two fights have been at
205. Is that someplace you want to stay at 205 at this point?
Oh, I feel much stronger, and the guys in the heavyweight now are huge. I mean, these guys are really big. You know, look at Travis Brown. Look at, you know, the only one that's really small is Cain Velasquez, but he has a good wrestling background to handle these big guys. You know, just once these guys figure out to stop that takedown from Kane, that Kane's going to have a hard time. But these guys are huge. These guys are not small anymore. You know, the sports has evolved so much that I would say that I'm probably like the number two generation of a fighter. And we're probably working on, Kane Velasquez is probably like a generation three, probably generation, almost a generation four kind of fighter. You know, people are developing so fast, and that these fighters are just so. Before you know it, guys, you're going to see fighters not younger than 20, I mean, not younger than 18 and not older than 27, just like the NFL, because these guys are going to improve and the training is going to improve, and these guys are going to, you know, think about it. I've been fighting since 96. So the first UFC on pay-per-view was probably 99. So those guys have already been training that you see now. Look at Michael McDonald. All these guys are 19, 20 years old. They already been training for 10 years, 10 plus years.
So you've seen a drastic shift in the MMA landscape. You actually fought for the UFC before the Ultimate Fighter finale in 2005. Did you have any sense of how big MMA was going to get at that time? Because it just exploded after that fight, obviously.
Not a clue whatsoever, because at that time you would hear rumors that UFC was up for sale. That's when you see. Remember that big deal for, I don't know if it's still, if you can find it online or not, but it was kind of weird that when the UFC had a commercial on Spike TV, they did like a reality kind of thing. It was all about Chuck Liddell. That's when Chuck Liddell was their mainstay, and everybody was complaining because the UFC was saying they didn't call it MMA or NHB. They were calling it UFC fighting, and that show was a flop, but it was a brand builder to the fact that people were branding this fighting in MMA, which was called MMA, or before I started fighting, it was called NHB, No Holds Barred. Now they're branding as UFC fighting, and then probably 6 months later, that's when the Ultimate Fighter came out. But within that time, do you remember the time when you would see all these UFC fighters? You would see Forrest Griffin, Josh Thompson, Bonner. They're all on those reality shows, Blind Date or whatever it was.
Yeah, I remember that. I've never seen on the field.
There's a few of them on there, and that's when the UFC was just trying to get on TV and show the world that there is a different type of sport out there. It was I think the landscape changed a lot. You know, now it's on free TV. That's huge.
Mm. So, you know, I think I want to just ask you now, you fought for the UFC heavyweight title against Andrei Arlovsky back in 2005. How did you feel when you got that call?
Wow. That was one of those days I couldn't believe Bob Cook was talking to me about fighting for the heavyweight title. At that time I was living in Texas and traveling to California and staying with Crazy Bob Cook in a warehouse. And it was one of those things saying, man, it's an opportunity to make things change and get on the right path. But it was one of those things that was so surreal and wow. And the training camp went good, but everything else around me was falling apart and it was hard to stay together. But you know, I wouldn't change anything about it. It was one of the experiences. Say, I tried to do it.
Yeah. Does it give you a little bit of hope that you can get back in the UFC now that Andre's back in?
Yeah. Oh yeah. But no, I mean, I know I'm just one fight away. You know, one knockout away. I know I'm right there, just right on the bubble. Especially for Arlovsky. You know, he had two straight wins. And he's back in the UFC, and he got knocked out two wins ago, or two fights ago, and he's back in the UFC. But yeah, it kind of gives me hope. Yeah, it gives me hope. But you know, you just got to stay positive and look at the main thing and go, I'm going to keep going until the wheels fall off. If you don't have anything to put goals on or things to reach, then there's no point to it. So I stay pretty positive about the thing, and I just got to stay focused and keep the wind in my sails and keep training. And just get ready for that call.
Yeah. Excellent. So after you left UFC for the first time, you shifted over to Strikeforce. How was the mm-hmm. Strikeforce experience as compared to UFC?
Strikeforce experience. Either, you know, with Strikeforce is was one of those things, either they like you or they don't like you or they really don't like you. And it was hard to be one of those persons that they liked. It was very difficult with Scott Croker. Scott Croker had like an iron fist kind of thing on everything, and you had to talk, you had to do certain things. It was okay. I really got hustled on that contract. Thinking about it now, I wanted to stay with the UFC, but at the time, my management thought that Strikeforce was a better deal. And in that contract, it stated that I would get 5% of the gate if I'm the main event. And the UFC wouldn't match that. UFC always matches everything. They were going to match it, but they wouldn't match that part of the contract. And being under the Strikeforce banner, I only fought main event one time. That's when I fought Tank Abbott. And that's the only time I ever fought main event. And I asked, hey, well, let me – I know that show. Did the show make a profit or did it make anything? Do I get any gate? Oh, no, that show lost money. And since I asked that question, I asked for the paperwork and try to do an audit or whatever just to see, because I'm curious, because it, as I remember, half that stadium was filled. You know, why wouldn't it make any money? Why would you have another show? And no, I never became main event again.
Now, all that aside, you had what I feel were two very notable fights while with Strikeforce. Of course, the first one is the aforementioned Tank Abbott fight. So first of all, Tank Abbott, what was it like getting in there? Because he's another throwback in a way where he would just get in there and throw the leather. So, and that fight that fight's one of my favorites because it's just two guys going in there, lock the cage, and best man wins. And that's exactly what happened that night. Back to Tank Abbott, that fight.
You know, Tank Abbott was really fun. You know, that's what you see from generation one to generation two of a fighter. We trained for Tank Abbott. We knew exactly what he could do and exactly what he can't do. And when we trained for him, if you watch that fight again, he pushes up against the cage like he does everybody else, and he starts swinging overhand like and trying to get the big knockout. And if you notice, I was sitting there trying to bang with him on against the cage, and then I realized this was not our game plan. This is what we didn't work on. And I separated as fast as I could, and I got off the cage, and I knew I was faster. And we all knew I could be faster with the hands and faster with the strike. And boom, that's how I got the knockout. But that's when you see the generation of fighter. Tank Abbott comes in. Let's fight. Let's do this. You know, generation two, we're going to study you. We're going to figure you out. We're going to work around your weaknesses. And the funny thing is, when I saw Tank Abbott in the locker room, I said, hey, thanks for the fight, Tank. I really appreciate it. He goes, I had no idea who you were until you hit me.
Oh, wow.
And that just shows that Tank Abbott just shows up to fight. You know, hey Tank, you want to fight? Yeah, okay, show up and you fight. He didn't search me on the internet. He didn't call people to ask what's going on, what I'm about. He's like, I'm gonna go fight and I'm gonna go get him. I'm gonna go knock him out. I'm gonna go take his head off. And now the sport's developed to where they're gonna do research. They're gonna show videos and I won't fight him because he does this. Oh, I won't fight him because he's much of a kickboxer and I don't want to grapple. Or it's crazy how the sport, it's not genuine in who's the toughest guy like it first was in UFC 1 back in those days, which one's the best martial arts, which one's the best foundation. Now it's, can I win and get that bonus? Can I keep a winning record? Can I stay undefeated?
Yeah, definitely. Now, another big fight that you had under the Strikeforce banner was Overeem. What were your thoughts going into that, and how did the fight go for you?
Well, the fight went perfectly for Overeem. It went shitty for me. But it's just one. it's one of those things that back nowadays, you know, even now, I don't know, back then, I'm walking into that fight, you know, pretty much broke. I'm 20,000 plus in the hole from training camp and from not paying my bills, training for this fight. And I traveled to Greg Jackson's gym, training out there with Rashad Evans and his brother and Mike Van Arsdale, traveled back to California, trained here, trained there. I mean, I was just doing a lot of, getting all the good sparring and everything else. And then my last 2 weeks out, I was going with Rashad Evans' brother, and he slammed me down on his knee and it broke my rib. So I'm walking in this fight. I had a broken rib, but I couldn't pull out of the fight. And as you show, he landed that big knee and down goes Buentello. It was one of those things where I was right there on the gas. It felt great. Everything, the training camp went great. Just got injured, but I was at the point where I couldn't pull out. I couldn't pull out and fix myself because I would lose the placement for the fight. And I walked in that cage and tried to give it all I could. And if I would have just survived a little bit longer, I think he probably would have gassed. I would have got the win and, you know, been the Strikeforce heavyweight champion. But it didn't go that way.
Now, shortly after that, you made your way back to the UFC for a couple fights. How did you feel about that second run?
That second run, that felt like shit. To be honest with you, it was probably the worst two fights of my whole freaking career, and because I'm on the main stage and I didn't perform, I didn't fight, had too many issues going on. That's when I came off a good deal because I came out of Affliction. In Affliction, they really set the bar really high on how to treat fighters and stuff with Tom Asensio and all those guys with Affliction. So I came out of the Affliction banner because UFC bought them up. So I come into UFC out of Affliction, and man, I felt great. My training camps are good. I had everything in line, and it's just one of those things. Having the management around you and making decisions for you and putting you underneath the rock, and where you have to make a decision to go, either I stay with this management because they don't have my best interest anymore. And I had to shift management. And so that messed up my whole training camp. I couldn't train at AKA anymore because I released the previous manager because I just didn't think he was in my best interest anymore. And so they blackballed me from the gym until we settled it all out and figured it all out, blah, blah, blah. And I go into these fights with not 100% training camp, with just a ragtag kind of training camp and trying to put things together, trying to fight at the main stage with no good, severing ties with the management that was a good friend, and everything was great, but I just don't think they were at my best interest. And that put my mind not at ease and just constantly thinking. And I just went in those fights unprepared, mentally and physically. And I lost them both. You know, against Stephon Struve, I didn't have the right conditioning. My trainer at the time, my manager, it just messed everything up. And then for Congo, I totally tried to move out of state, try to go to Colorado and do a training camp there. Hell, it's just, you know, trying to get the right people around me, but those people were just holding on for money. They weren't for my best interest either. I finally realized that after the training, after the fight was over, and I realized how they're like, okay, all right, see you later. You know, where's my check? Mm-hmm. It's become a big business now to where trainers are not part of the team anymore. They're all individuals, and it's not fair anymore for the fighters that are coming up. It's going to be hard for guys to find good training camps to where they're family and they care about one each other and move forward and make the right decisions for each other. But now everybody just sticks their hands out. Doesn't matter if you win or lose, your training camp needs to lose with you. And nowadays you see a lot of training camps, if they're a fighter loses, then they're like, okay, well, all right, see you later. You know, where's my check? And that's what kind of situation I was in. It was bad. It was just bad, bad, bad. And it put me in a big depression. You know, I was really battling with depression out of the Congo, and then it just spiraled down to zero.
So how long was it before you got yourself squared away as far as your training went?
Oh, man, I'm just telling you. God, I lost the most stupidest fight. I lost against Tim Sylvia. I lost against Kitty. I lost against Conrad. And those fights I shouldn't have lost. And I just couldn't. Mentally, I wasn't strong enough anymore. I took a break. I think I took a six, seven-month break. And I actually talked to a sports psychologist. And, you know, I got on some good medication and just felt better. And as you can see, I went on a 4-fight win streak. Everything was going great. You know, everything is going great now. But it's just one of those things that you got to realize that either you're 100% mentally good or you're not good at all.
So now you've hooked up with Legacy Fight Championship. We're big fans of that promotion. We talked to Mick Maynard last week. What are your thoughts about fighting for Legacy?
I love the Legacy. They just don't want to put me on the Texas cards. I mean, right now I'm begging and crying. They freaking jacked me on the goddamn, sorry for my language, for the last title fight. I really got gypped on that. If that was not a work, I don't know what it was. If that was not a setup promoter, I don't know what that guy's name that helped out Legacy put that fight card together, but the guy that I fought was off his promotion. Bob something or Bob Jack or Jack Ass. I don't know what his name is, but he's one of the big promoters over there in Oklahoma. You know, let me search his damn name. It's funny that you win a fight against me and you know you lost that damn fight. You lost that fight 100%. And then the first person you think on your Facebook is that promoter? Hello? So he knew the freaking work was in. He knew he was going to win that fight. Only one judge called that whole fight. The whole fight, the way it was, four to one, 4 rounds to 1, and the other guy beat me 4 rounds to 1. Get the hell out of here. That was a work. It was set. I think that promoter said, hey, this is my guy. Do me a favor. Let him win. So pissed off. I want that rematch so bad. If I get that rematch, I'm going to break him in the first round. I'm going to freaking break him in the first round. How can you tell me? If you watch, I'm all fired up. If you watch me, I fought over 50 times. If you know me and you see me fought, have I ever took anybody down in a fight? Never. Not once.
Yeah.
Never. I've never took anybody down. I take him down in the fifth round. They should have gave me a 10-7 round because I took him down in the fifth round. I've never taken anybody down. Paul Montello takes somebody down in the final round? Come on. That's a 10-7 round. Don't you guys agree?
I agree. If I was on the Texas Athletic Commission, actually Oklahoma
Athletic
Commission, I would have scored it. Yeah, I would have scored it 10-7 for you. I did see that fight, though, and I did ask Mick his thoughts about it, and he has to play the promoter card, I suppose, but he was like, it seemed close to me. I'm more along the lines with you, where it really appeared to me watching this that it was it was your fight, and when it was announced, yeah. I felt a lot like you did.
I get the decision, I lose the fight, you know, I'm like, oh, what am I going to do? You know, Friday, I said, okay, you know, it's just another fight, I'm not going to think about it, whatever. So Saturday, after being out and having a great time, Saturday I finally got to sit down and watch it on YouTube. And after I got done watching it on YouTube, I'm like, what the hell? How the hell did I lose that fight? What did I do wrong? Okay, I lost the third round. I'll admit that. I lost the third round. I might try to be all cocky, my hands down, and almost got my mouthpiece shot out to the first row. But, hey, okay, I lost the first round, but I didn't lose anything else. How is that even possible? And, yeah, Mike is going to play the Mick is going to play the promoter card because he didn't want to piss off the other guy. And then the other guy said, oh, I don't want to fight no more. Well, if you think you really won that fight, be a fight. If it's me, if I won, the guy goes, hey, I want a rematch. Let's do it. I don't care. Let's do it again. I'll beat you again. The guy doesn't want none.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I'm going to wait. I got to sit here and wait to the end of the year to get that rematch? Come on. You got to tell Mick, man. Everybody wants to see that fight. While it's on everybody's head right now, and I'm not getting $1 million to fight for Legacy, might as well just do it now. Let's get it over with, and let's get that championship belt around the real winner.
There you go. I certainly can agree with that sentiment. Now, another thing that I do want to ask you is Legacy – a lot of guys from Legacy get noticed and wind up in the UFC again. Is this kind of your thought process with Legacy, if you use it as a springboard to have that final run?
It's not my thought process. It's my road. It's my highway. Legacy is known for putting their fighters and allowing their fighters to go to the UFC. Everybody else that wants me to fight for their promotion wants to put me under a contract for 3-4 years and I'm stuck there. Legacy's so awesome. Legacy's like, hey, come fight for us. We're going to give you fights. And if the UFC calls or Bellator calls or World Series of Fighting calls, you can go. Your contract will be on the shelf waiting for you. Great. We're going to fight you. Boom, let's fight. Ah, I'm sitting here on the bubble again. I had to wait 6 months and put a fight. And that's what's cool, so cool about Nick. He pushed me out. I was supposed to fight in January. It got pushed out to March. I mean, February. January, February got pushed out. January card, February card got pushed out. Boom, I got on the March card, and he gave me a title shot because I had to wait so long. And now that I just had, I gave him one of the probably what, top 10 fights that he's had on Access TV for Legacy. My first time to ever do 5 rounds, and I did every freaking 5 rounds, I beat that kid by 15, 20%, 28% on some of the rounds by striking, even with the takedown. And I lose the fight. Everybody knows it. It's still on everybody's mind now. What, another 2 months, everybody's going to forget about that fight. And that's what's pissing me off is that why Legacy got they have a goose egg in their hand right now to put this fight on and make their champion fight me again for a rematch. Let's unify that title if he can beat me, and it won't happen. Now everybody's going to forget about it and go, oh, I don't remember that fight. Oh, they fought? Huh.
Yeah. No, I can see your side of the things as well. Now, my last question, and this would be kind of like looking back at your whole career, what are some highlights as far as in the cage? What are some big moments that you had, maybe your biggest win inside that cage? What did you feel most proud of?
You know, the most proud is that when I first started fighting, I told myself, I'm that's all I want. I just want to go fight for the UFC. That's all I want, just fight one time. And everybody doubted me, everybody around me, because you got to think back in 96, 97, till 2000, maybe 2005, people thought fighting wouldn't be as big as it is now. And everybody used to tell me from my hometown to close friends to tell me that I could never make it to the UFC, and I'll never fight in the UFC. And when I fought UFC 51, which was a long, long time ago, and all I want to do is, and I could have walked away from the sport then, and all I wanted to do was just get the win and walk away. And I got the win, got a knockout. You know, I even got a knockout of the night bonus. Can you believe that? I got a knockout of the night bonus in UFC 51. Do you guys want to know what it was?
What?
A little 10-foot trophy, a little 10-inch trophy. I got a 10-inch trophy, and I brought it back to AKA, and somebody looked at it and dropped it and broke it. So I don't got that trophy anymore. And I was ready to walk away. I was ready to walk away from the sport. And Dana White comes to the locker room and says, man, what's next for you? What do you want to do? And I go, well, I guess I'm going to go back to Texas and start swinging a hammer and become a carpenter again and go on with my life. And he's like, what? Are you serious? I go, yeah, this is what I want to do, just make it to the UFC. And Dana White gave me a contract for 3 more fights, and here I am today.
Yeah. So besides trying to get into the UFC one more time, well, what else you got going on in your life?
Oh, man, I got all kinds of stuff going on. I'm so busy, it's not even funny anymore. Talking about highlights, what's pretty cool is that, you know, me a little from a little town of Amarillo, Texas, from a smaller town from Tuya, Texas, I've traveled the world because I started fighting, because I didn't listen to anybody that told me I could not make it in the sport or couldn't do what I wanted to do. And I've been to Russia, I've been to Hawaii, I've been to Denmark, I've been to, God, I've been to Ireland, and I've been everywhere just because of fighting. It's pretty cool. I actually got to go to Russia twice. I might get to go to Russia at the end of the year. And maybe the next 2 months I get to go back to Russia once I get my passport renewed, and I get to go back to Russia because Russia is putting on fights left and right. And that's probably the hardest part right now, is finding fights. It's not about the money. It's just finding the fights and getting the fights in, and Russia's putting them on so much that that's where I got two fights pretty fast back-to-back over there in Russia. So I'm looking forward to that. That's a good highlight, in the whole career. And right now, my motivation is to prove these people wrong again, that I can make it back to the UFC. And, you know, let's be honest, you know, I'm not no spring chicken, but I'm healthy. I'm 40 years old. And I don't got no broken bones or you know, some shoulder injuries, you know, shoulder surgeries 3 times in a row or knee surgeries 3 times in a row. I'm really healthy, you know, and I feel really comfortable. I'm mentally strong, and I want to make it back. I want to make it back, and I feel like I owe the UFC those 2 fights against Stefan Struve and Congo. I owe them that fight because I fought like shit that time. So that's what I look forward to. I just want to make it back and fight till the wheels fall off. And right now I'm working with another good friend. We're doing a little small promotion in Texas, which is getting really good response. We're having really good sponsors and really good fighters jumping on there. Man, I just got so much stuff involved with this company called Oval IV, which basically I'm promoting that stuff and getting big sales and getting into big distribution stuff. And Oral IV is part of like the Fountain of Youth. So if you guys check it out, oraliv.com, it's probably the best water or hydration aid that you could ever have. And there's a lot with those guys. Man, I got so much stuff going on. It's hard to keep talking about it.
All right. Paul, I want to thank you so much. We finally got this down. I'm just so happy we had this time with you. Is there any sponsor or any gym that you want to give a shout-out to before you go?
Yeah, basically the main thing, check out oraliv.com. These guys really supported me, but it's probably the best product I ever took. Also, Machine. It's another supplement that I take that's really, really good. Those guys, those two combined are really great. Also, Defiant Fighting Championship. It's on Facebook. We have a website, Defiant Fighting Championship on Facebook. You can probably find it off one of my Facebook links. And that's the show we're doing in Texas. You guys are amateurs. Our next show is going to be probably end of August or September, and we're also thinking about flying 4 people in to come fight. So we have enough sponsors, and we have stuff moving really quick that we want to bring people in from out of state to come fight for us. So check it out. Check out my website, paulwinsell.com, and fill out the forms to sign up for our Defiant Fighting Championship.
All right, so Defiant Fighting Championship, and people can find you on Twitter at Paul Bentello if they want to. And, Paul, thank you once again. I really enjoyed this interview, and you're welcome back anytime.
No.
If you make it back to USC, don't forget about us, okay?
No, don't forget about me. You're the one right there. You're the one that you guys want to talk. I can talk all day, as you can tell. I can tell you stories every day.
I think next time we'll go over some road stories that you might have. But, again, thank you so much, and you have a great night, sir.
Man, so fun. Catch you guys soon.
Okay.
Thank you.
One place where you are guaranteed to find a great guy. You know, the kind of guy that carries you off on horseback and flies you to Paris and likes to talk about his feelings? He's at the movies. Well, in the movies. Girls are lining up for guys like this. But not you, because you bought your tickets ahead on Fandango. So adios, long lines, and hello, handsome astronaut, brain surgeon, spy.
Make a date with Fandango.
All right, Omega, that was Paul Bentello. That was fun.
That was fun. You never really know what you're going to get from MMA fighters, and this is a good one.
Yeah. A lot of stories. He's been in the game, I would really say, through 3 different distinct eras. And just to hear some big differences, you kind of forget that. You look at a guy's record, and you go, okay, he won 3 in a row. He won those 3 in the same night.
Yeah.
No, that doesn't happen anymore, so...
Yeah, it's crazy to think that a guy went out there and you know, you look at a fight now and you see a guy get beat up, and then you think, well, this guy got, back in the day, you got beat up like that, and then you had to go out and do it again.
Yeah. Some interesting stories about Dan Severn, about legacy. He really wants that rematch. He really wants that rematch. And Omega, if you ever do find that, I want your opinion on Paul Bentella's last fight, because when I asked the question to Mick, I didn't want to really go, well, Mick, you're crazy, you're blind. But it did seem something was, especially when you have one judge that kind of, you ever see 12 Angry Men? I guess that one judge was like Jack Lemmon. He was just, not Jack Lemmon, Henry Fonda, and he was, you know, he was going to go to the jury with that decision. But anyway, I am a film major, and I just threw 12 Angry Men at you. And Jack Lemmon played the Henry Fonda character later on, the Tony Danza version, just for those listening at home. So I was right in both cases, Omega. But, Omega,
there you go.
Anything else with Paul Bentella?
No, I think we've covered it.
All right. Are you ready this time?
I am still ready, yes.
All right, coming up this Saturday, it is UFC Fight Night, and it's an interesting UFC Fight Night. I think looking at it from top to bottom, you kind of say, well, this is one of those fight nights, and you don't really mean it like that. I think the preliminaries have some interesting fights, especially the one fight in particular that's behind that paywall that UFC has up. I think we're starting to see their evil diabolical plan. But let's start at the top, Omega. We got Matt the Immortal Brown taking on Eric Silva. My biggest question to you is, which Silva shows up?
That is the question. You know, he's hasn't been very impressive. You know, he was talked about certainly being a top 10 welterweight when he came in, and not so much. He has had trouble with the elite of the division. Certainly losses to John Fitch and Don Young Kim did nothing to help him, but he is coming off a quick TKO victory over Taki Norisoto, which was pretty impressive in his last fight. If he comes out and is aggressive, I mean, he's got a shot. We know he's got good submission game. We know he's got good striking. We know he's fast. We know he's athletic. He's going up against Matt Brown, and Matt Brown is just the guy who won't quit. You will not see him give up, and he is quickly racked up six wins in a row. Granted, over less than stellar competition, but, I mean, some of that is not his fault. He was supposed to fight Carlos Condit in his last fight, but got injured, so he had to come. This is why he's fighting Eric Silva now. But he is certainly in that conversation for a guy who's, you know, number seven. He is right there in that conversation for being maybe one, maybe two wins away from a title shot if he can continue to get past, continue to rack up wins. Really just needs a one signature win against the top 10 welterweight to catapult himself back in that conversation, especially with GSP gone, being out of the conversation. You know, Silva's a dangerous foe, though. Silva is a guy who can submit you, and Matt Brown has shown some weakness against submission artists in the past. It's going to come down to kind of what you said, which Eric Silva shows up, and is he going to be able to weather the storm of Matthew Moore Brown? Because he has all the tools, got more power, got more. He's not going to be able to beat him on the ground, beat Silva on the ground. But Brown has a way of making good fighters look bad, and he's. It's surprisingly an underdog in this fight, which I don't understand.
Yeah, I saw that come out today. He's a, what, 2-1 underdog?
2-1? That seems ridiculous to me. This is a guy who's, like I said, he doesn't quit. He's got a really well-rounded game. He's really aggressive, really exciting. Should be a great fight. I'm picking the immortal one, Matt Brown, to win by TKO in round 2.
I am as well. Same method, same round. Everything, Omega, we agree on. And in fact, if I can find a reputable online gambling service, I might even put money down on Matt Brown, baby.
the value right there.
Yeah, right. You know, 500. 500 becomes 1,000.
There you go.
Where it becomes a huge debt. One or the other, Omega.
What do you pick? Pick one.
Costas Philippou, Lorenz Larkin. Ah. How's that for your co-main event?
Yeah, you know what? This could be interesting. You know, Philippou has run into some trouble of late, coming off a few losses against Luke Rockhold and Francis Carmont. You know, Rockhold, we know, as we saw last week, is very, very good, so no real shame there. But having two wins in a row, two losses in a row, I should say, is not good for your longevity within the UFC. You know, Lorenz Larkin is a guy who we would think it would have done better as well, but lost the decision to Brad Tavares in his last fight, and also lost to Francis Carmont. These are guys, you know, less so with Larkin, but, you know, a win would be really helpful for their careers. And,
yeah.
And you know, because they're in this middle ground right now, not even quite gatekeepers in this division. You know, I think when it comes down to it, I think Lorenz Larkin has a lot, really good striking ability. I think he's probably got the more ways to win this fight. I am going to pick Larkin by decision in this one.
I got to go with Philippou simply because I like his name. Yeah. Eric Hoch will be taking on Darren Cruikshank. Now, I don't know much about either of these guys. You got to walk me through this one. Why am I going to watch this one?
Well, Eric Koch was a guy who had fought at featherweight, and he had a shot at featherweight, and now he's kind of had to move up in weight because that weight cut was too much for him. This is a guy who went too far. He is 3-2 in the UFC. He's won his last fight against Rafael Oliveira by TKO punches. Looked really good doing that. You know, certainly coming off those losses to Dustin Poirier and Ricardo Lamas was really, really good for him. And this is a guy who's got all kinds of tools to win. He's a very good guy. Someone who's can win on the feet, can win on the ground. He's got those kind of skills. Cruikshank's a guy who's had problems with aggressive guys. He hasn't fought as good competition as Koch. But I think, you know, when you look at this fight, I'm seeing a guy who's now fighting at his natural weight class and had great skills before that. So I think I'm going to pick Koch in this one. I think he's going to take this by TKO in the first.
All right. Now, there's a few other fights scattered here and there. I think the main event of the preliminary card, which is on Fox Sports 2, Herman and Natel, is going to be a good one. And the fight, the Nick Lentz fight on the UFC Fight Pass, I think, is going to be brilliant. I think they should have been on the main card because who really wants to see Sal Palelli fight, frankly?
Yeah, that one's a confusing one. I don't really understand why he's on the main card.
He went in, where was it, Australia not too long ago, but regardless, is there anything else you see besides, or do you want to talk about those two fights I brought up?
Well, you know, Nick Lentz versus Manny Gambierian, that could be a good fight. I think that's an interesting one. The one I think is a absolute freaking travesty is Eddie Wineland being buried on the preliminary card, not even the main event. This is a guy who's ranked number 4 in the bantamweight division.
Yeah,
he has had a number of fights that are good. He has fought for titles. This is a guy who should be fighting, who should be more named. This is again the lighter weight class is kind of getting forgotten. I mean, he fought Henan Barao.
Yeah,
he lost, but he fought Henan Barao. He fought Joseph Benavidez. He fought Uriah Faber. Those are the guys he's lost to in the last 3 years. That's ridiculous. Those are all great guys. There's no shame in losing to any of those guys. And, you know, I mean, he deserves his ranking. He is a top-tier talent, and he is buried in the preliminary card. I think that's shocking. He's going to take this one easily, I think, probably by TKO. But this is just one that I don't like. You know, again, why is Soa Plele on the main card and Eddie Wineland is not? I don't understand.
And even that other – like at least he has some type of name value, but I'm looking at this welterweight fight with Tim Means also on the main card. It's like, I don't know. And I don't have Fox Sports 2.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is, there's a lot of, it's a definite Fox Sports 2 card, in a lot of respects. I mean, I'm very excited about the main event. I think Eddie Wineland's going to be a good fight. I think Nick Lenson, Nick Gambier is going to be a good fight. Herman Nicol as the main event of the preliminaries, that makes sense. I'm okay with that. But, you know, overall, this card is somewhat underwhelming on paper. But as we get into the fights, it may be one of these cards that could generate a lot of knockdowns, a lot of submissions. It could be very exciting.
Yeah, I agree with that. Sometimes, like I said a few weeks ago, the cards on paper that you're least excited about sometimes turn out to be the best. Now, so that's UFC. It's coming up on it's everywhere that UFC has some type of a presence. The main card will be on Fox Sports 1. The preliminary card will be on Fox Sports 2. And the beginning preliminary card is on UFC Fight Pass. So several different ways that if you want to see the entire event, well, first of all, you have to pay $9.95 for Fight Pass. You got to hope your cable carrier has Fox Sports 2, and then you need Fox Sports 1. So probably some type of sports package with your cable operator is necessary as well. But that's life in 2014 with UFC and their fight cards. Now, guys, this is for both of you. Raw, how did you guys feel about it? I don't want to get into a big, long conversation about it, just overall thoughts of probably the worst Raw I have ever seen crapped out of Vince McMahon's ass.
I could you be a little bit more specific in your opinion? I'm not sure where you're going with that.
Oh, it was awful.
It sucked.
It was a bad Raw.
Even the 90-minute Hulu Plus version was hard to watch.
I'll put it this way. I did Rev Raw on BOC Nation this week, and it's always a pleasure to be there, and I thank Brady and the Voice of Choice for the opportunity to be there, more so Brady because it's really his baby. And I'll tell you what, I wouldn't have watched this show. Bates Motel comes on at 10 o'clock. I even relayed the story there, but Bates Motel comes on at 10 o'clock. I would have tuned out. It was bad. It didn't keep my attention. It was just a bad show.
It was so bad you were trying to hire indie wrestlers to be on Raw.
Yeah. True.
It's true. It was a fun, dude. I was helped. I produced the episode, which is fun to listen to when you don't have to throw in ideas and opinions. And I hadn't even seen it yet, and I was like, well, you know, maybe I'm just going to wipe this slate clean in my head, and I'll watch it and with a clean. No, it was. My biggest gripe was Sheamus as U.S. champ again. Sure.
Well, see, that doesn't bother me as much as the fact that it was decided
a battle royal.
Yeah.
A battle royal, yeah. It's just everything about that show. But I liked the Kane. You're probably going to hate
this.
I liked the Kane. The heavy hand thing was hilarious.
That comes from years of watching the WCW product.
Yes, I know.
You've been scarred.
I had a lot of fond memories of crappy. The thing with the mask was annoying me. I'm like, oh, just stop that. But that was okay. But if Sheamus was going to win the title, I don't really necessarily have a problem with him. The battle royal was.
I want to see.
Stupid.
I want to see. I wish I was with someone that was so dumb or just so into the show, whatever you want to call it, and they didn't realize Kane was going to be in the back seat when the hood went down, when Daniel Bryan put the, oh my God, Kane's in the back seat. I would love to be with that person and just smack them as hard as I could in the back of the head.
I was so surprised I had to bring the dog in to watch it.
Thank God I got that newfangled DVR.
But
hold on, let me rewind. Let me stick my mouse here on who is that Kane?
I didn't think a good point that who was the co-host? Well, the host on that show. I forget his name. Chris Fox, is that it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, Chris Fox, he made a good point that the first time that we saw Bree and Daniel in the car was that, in fact, Kane. We were seeing it through his eyes.
Yeah, he made a great point there, and I was like, yeah, I guess so. I was so, like, just waiting for it. At that point, like I said, I liked it. I didn't, you know, I knew what was going to happen. That's why I kind of liked it. But I didn't think of that because I was just trying to get through the episode as a whole. I didn't even think of it at the time. I was like, oh, yeah, that must be, you know.
Why not just run him over?
Well, yeah.
And I think that would make sense.
We both made these points separately. Why was Brie not allowed to be out there for WrestleMania, but she's right in the middle of this angle now?
That doesn't make sense to me, especially if you're going to bring her in as hard and heavy into this angle where she is a focal point of this angle. Why not just have her come out and celebrate with her husband? I mean, they were a week from getting married away. Could you? I'd want my significant other there in the ring with me.
I would have done the curtain call and had her come out anyway.
But had they acknowledged? Well, I guess they did Total Divas. I was going to say, had they even acknowledged they were together? But then they had Total Divas. So yeah,
they had Total Divas. They had that special that came out like the Tuesday. Pardon me, the Tuesday after WrestleMania, they had that special come out where they were talking about the wedding and all that sort of stuff too. They have a week off.
Well,
after WrestleMania.
It's hard for them to ignore what's happening on Total Divas when they're pushing it so hard.
Yeah.
But no, that never happened. You just advertised the damn show that I watched. Come on.
So we're in agreement. We all agree that this was a pretty bad, poorly executed episode of Raw.
I can't think of one.
I can't even think of a positive.
I can't.
Take out, Dan.
No.
Besides the main event. The main event was really good.
You know, I thought the Battle Royal, if you accepted that, other than the fact that it was a Battle Royal for the United States title, I thought the Battle Royal was fine.
It was a good way to open the show. I'll give you that.
You know,
I can think of bad nitros that were better.
Okay.
Yeah. You're just getting charged up for your VOC Nation debut.
I'm doing a bunch of research, which is just remembering things. No, I'm serious. It was. I can't think of a Raw that I hated more. I'm sorry. I'm trying not to be the typical. Let's go on the podcast and bash the show. I hated this episode.
I didn't hate it, but I certainly didn't enjoy it. So.
You were just very indifferent, Omega.
Yes.
You gave it stern indifference. Arms were crossed. Squinting at the screen.
I don't care.
That's right. I
even got up and got a drink.
I couldn't even be bothered to care.
Oh.
Yes. Now.
I don't care.
So anything else was wrong? No?
No. Well, I think...
Yeah,
before it gets any worse.
Yeah. I have one thing about Raw.
Okay. Lana.
I know you guys hate this, but Adam Rose, what's the thought on him?
Actually, I kind of liked it.
Did you like that? Okay.
Yeah, I kind of liked it.
Adam Rose is strange to me in a family-friendly atmosphere when he's obviously a raver who parties all night on the assistance of ecstasy.
Dropping acid or something, yeah. I
don't get it. I don't get the gimmick, how it fits in. But
I think it's hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, I don't take it too seriously. I think it's fine.
In 6 months, when he's doing absolutely nothing on Raw, maybe jumping out the roof off.
It was the one thing I thought about, though, is he could, especially after they started, the crowd kept singing his theme song after the music ended.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, this guy's the next Fandango, and where's Fandango now?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So. Exactly. Enjoy that 15 minutes, I believe Triple H said a month ago or so. So not much more to talk about Raw Extreme Rules. I still have to watch. Still have to watch, so I couldn't really...
You heard the things we were saying earlier?
Most.
Yeah, you're pretty much caught up.
Fair enough. But it was a great show tonight. You guys handled the emergency situation quite well, so I appreciate that.
Is everybody alive over there?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, then that's all I care about.
Everything's fine.
It went from what am I going to do about this interview to, is he alive? Is he okay?
Yes, I did read the chat discussion that you guys madly going back and forth.
Oh, crap. I was prepared, dude.
What are we going to do? And that's why it works out to have you access to the studio. I finally... Well, you've had the keys to the studio for some time, Dan.
I still log in every show just in case.
It's a good idea. It's frankly a good idea in case something like this happens. So.
I mean, I had his UFC page and the wiki up. I was gonna go through it, my friend.
You know what's funny? I couldn't replicate this. I'm just thinking, like, if a Monday night comes up and you're not available for. Obey the Puck. I certainly couldn't.
We got Paul, dude.
Yeah, but I'd be like, so hi, Paul.
What happened in hockey? Things and stuff.
Okay, well, thanks for tuning in.
Goodbye.
What was that?
I'd be
like, Dean, what is icing exactly?
How can he be offsides? I don't get it.
What is offside? What is a power play mean?
Now I know what a power play is.
Back and forth. Back and forth.
That's hockey to me, Dan. It's really an exquisite and epic ping pong game.
I tell you, weeks ago, you tweeted that tweet about, what was your exact words about being curious?
The passion that people have for sporting events in general.
Yeah.
It's just so weird to me that you're that emotionally invested in something you have no part of.
And you know, I couldn't tell you why.
I don't get it.
I couldn't tell you why.
Like, there'll be people. There were two people engaged on the 400 bus here in South Jersey in such a debate about the Eagles season last year. And I'm just sitting there like, man, I'm worried about the research and development tax credit. And these guys are debating about football.
Well, you know, priorities.
It's not important. As I finish up yet another HIC Talk Radio.
In the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter. I enjoy screwing around and cheering the team and being able to actually use all the years I've watched it and actually put something out there now. But in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter.
There are people much worse than you, Dan.
Oh, thank you. I have a line. You know what I mean? I have a thin line, but I have a line. Like Daniel Bryan endorsing the Pittsburgh Penguins, he's dead to me. That's where my line is dead. He's dead to me, and I hope he fails.
So I give you the fact that you don't take it too seriously.
I'm kidding.
And then you go there.
I'm kidding. Come on.
Well, we had another great show here. I know you're kidding. But we had another great show here tonight. Paul Bentella, make sure you listen back to it because I think it's worth another listen.
It's one of those interviews where I was like, I really want to be part of it, but I don't know what the hell to ask this guy.
Yeah. So next week, though, we will have Sam the Machine Shields. And that's going to be interesting. Who would have thought when this program started, 2 years ago, we would have had one of the former Midnight Sensations on, but it's going to happen next week as we talk about On Point Wrestling. It's really the On Point preview show as they return with Relentless. Dan, 1 year in the making, 347 days, we're finally going to see Matt Tremont and Lowlife Louis Ramos.
That is going to be, if you thought that the match we talked about last month was incredible and action-packed action, as they like to say, this is going to knock you right off. It really is.
Very true. We'll talk more about that next week. maybe have some clips. The match I am most looking forward to, and it has been announced, Dan, that this will be the first round title match for this show. It's Sam Shields and Joey Janela. So I can't
Man.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so they're really trying to stir that pot, huh?
Yeah, yeah. So I certainly can't wait to talk about that in much more detail next week. We're also going to talk about this UFC fight night that's going on Saturday night. And that's the show next week. So I can't wait for that. Omega, where can the fine people find you?
Follow me on Twitter, at Omega Squad.
Dan, how about yourself?
Follow me on Twitter at DanLawD3, and the Monday Night Show, Obey the Puck, at Obey Puck Show.
That's right, and of course, I am the Dean of Credibility, Double D. You can find me at Folsom County. It's like the song, except the titles. You know, kind of
set the prisons inside the county.
Well, yeah, it's Folsom County. Prison. So Folsom County on Twitter. You can also follow the official HIC Talk Radio Twitter at HIC Talk Radio. Make sure you check out the website, HICTalkRadio.com. Right now, MMA Warehouse is having a buy three, get the fourth free T-shirt sale. T-Fury is also continuing their May the 4th Be With You sale. It goes on for three more days, so make sure you check out some of those styles. Purchase something. Make sure you do it through HIC Talk Radio. com. And of course, movie tickets.
Buy one of our shirts. Buy one of theirs.
We could have that angry sentiment. Maybe not. Or you can also check out Fandango. Just go to HIC Talk Radio. Click on Godzilla and get your movie tickets. So next week, Sam Shields on point. Got a lot on the plate for next week. We'll see you then, Dan. I believe we're under some pressure.
Keep coming up with love, but it's so slashed and torn. Pressure.